This is Unpacking Design. I'm your host, Mike LaValle.
And I'm Tim Ung. Every week, we talk about the tools and tech that inspires our lives as designers.
Hey, what's everybody? Welcome back to Unpacking Design. Tim, last time we talked a little bit about, I guess, I don't remember what we ended up calling it, but it was like unpacking office. What would you call it? Unpacking offices?
Unpacking offices during the pandemic. Home offices.
Home offices, right, yes. So we went back and forth about our home offices. Ben, that was kind of an upbeat, positive topic. This is not that topic. This is going to be a little bit of a sort of a Debbie Downer topic in the same vein, but on a different skew. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because I feel like it's something that a lot of people deal with, but not a lot of people are talking about outright. And it's not necessarily, I'm going to be very clear before we go any further. I'm not talking about my office. We're not talking about your office specifically either. We're talking about things that could happen in offices to lead to this situation. So today I would like to talk about the very important, but kind of not so happy, optimistic topic of toxic workplaces. So the reason why I started thinking about this was twofold. One, the Young Architect Winter Series is upon us soon, you know, within the next like several months. And one of the topics that was requested, as I had kind of put in a proposal, and we'll see what happens with that, but whatever, was about toxic environments. And it was sort of an extension of the topic that I had talked about with burnout. And it just felt like the natural sort of next thing to think about. It's also, the reason why I wanted to bring it up is because it's also a very important topic in the book that I'm writing. So it all kind of jives together. Burnout is caused by toxic environments. We spend, really the long and short of it is, we spend at least 8 hours a day, whether it's working remotely or, you know, working at a physical location, during COVID or otherwise or whatever. COVID is a factor, but it's not really what I wanted to talk about today. We spend so much time and so much effort in our work environment that we don't really think about the fact that if we're most likely to burn out because of the work environment that we have. And if there's something that is creating a toxic office environment, we're even more susceptible to that. So you think about it, if you keep your life into a simple pie, you have 8 hours of work, you have 8 hours of other stuff, and then you have approximately 8 hours of sleep. So you have a third for each of those things. And now granted, nobody's life is a perfect pie like that. It's usually, you know, maybe it's like 9 hours or 10 hours of work because you have to commute, or you have just more than 8 hours that you work naturally every day. You have fewer hours for your lifetime, or maybe you really want more lifetime and you really only get like 6 hours or less of sleep every night, which is not healthy either. And so I wanted to talk about this and kind of unpack it today with you, Tim, because I know that we know a lot of people who have gone through a lot of different things, and we've heard stories in the industry, and we've heard stories about bad situations and things like that. I don't want to necessarily get into like very specific stories, but I did want to unpack kind of like the things that you think about when you think about a toxic environment, maybe like what comes to mind first, and maybe that's a way to kick it off.
Yeah, you know, whenever I think about a toxic work environment, to me, it always comes down to being a place that doesn't allow someone to be true to themselves and to allow someone to be who they really are. You know, it's a place that oppresses a lot of the genuine sides of people. And, you know, there might be an argument that there are some things that shouldn't happen in a workplace, right? And that's 100%, you know, like that's, there are things that shouldn't be said. There are things that shouldn't be done. But there are also a lot of restrictions, or people who put false restrictions in place or unwritten rules on certain people. And when it gets very targeted towards a person or a few people, I think then it becomes a toxic work environment. If it's a firm-wide rule that everyone is having to abide by, I think that in some cases, the rules can also create a toxic work environment, depending on what they are, you know? Yep. And that's the only way that I can really describe it, because I haven't personally been in a toxic work environment. So I might have been in a toxic setting before, but I don't recall one right away. So
maybe another way to, I think that's a really good point, because I think that there are a lot of times where, but I guess the best way to describe it is that individual team leaders or people who are kind of like that middle management can also make toxic workplaces, or for their teams or for the people that they work around. So like, it doesn't have to be, it's not from like the top of the mountain down to the bottom of the mountain, right? It doesn't have to be a full umbrella effect of like the entire office is bad to have a toxic work environment. You can have a toxic work environment for a variety of reasons. A couple of reasons that come to mind that kind of have come out of the research that I've been doing specifically are, you know, if you have bad communication across teams or across different people from leadership to subordinates, or people who are kind of, you know, green to whatever the discipline or profession, whether it's architecture or something else, that can lead to a toxic work environment, because you're not really able to clearly identify what the goals or the mission, or it's kind of like that start with why mentality. Like, if you can't explain to the people who work with you why you're even there, or what they're supposed to be doing, and they just kind of flounder, then that's toxic, because then nobody wins and everybody kind of fails. You know, the other thing that can happen is there's just poor leadership. People are just not good leaders. And I feel like leaders are, and you may disagree with me on this, Tim, but I feel like there are people who are naturally just leaders. There are people who may grow into being more leaders than others, but there are people who I think intuitively are just, whether they kind of want to be or not, they are just naturally built or gifted in a way to like really be the people who lead other people. And I'm not saying that they necessarily always fall into those leadership positions. I'm just saying that like you strike me as a person who's a leader, right? Like, you strike me as a person who is able to, whether or not you know, like, I've never seen you actually work in a work environment, but I would gather, based on the kinds of conversations that we have and the types of motivations that you have as an individual, that you are just kind of a natural leader in, if you were given that situation, right? Whether you are or not, I guess, is a different story, but there are certain character traits that I know there are other people who could care less about being a leader, and that speaks to the point that they probably shouldn't be a leader. And when you put certain people into those positions that shouldn't necessarily be in those positions, it becomes a very odd sort of dynamic, I think, where you're trying to have somebody lead a team or lead a project or lead even one more person to do something together, and it can kind of fall apart, or people resent each other, or they don't want to be working in the way that they are. And I think it could be, I've seen that definitely in different places I've worked in, and it's not me bringing anybody down. I think it's just an interesting thing that you see over time, where certain people just, it's not even that they see or they don't see the problems that are happening. Because I think that a lot of the things that happen with a quote unquote toxic environment are little things that kind of bubble up to the surface over time too. It's not like there's, you know, these big offices that work like sweatshops. That's not what I mean. It's more like you have these like, these pieces that fracture, that start to like show the seams. And I don't necessarily think that I've worked at a toxic environment in either of the major jobs that I've had, but you start to see little cracks of like, if that just kept tearing a little bit more, and it's just the crack grew a little bit more and more over time, eventually, if it's not dealt with properly, you can see how that can become a really big problem for the entire office, if not the like one or two people it's already affecting. So I know that's kind of a little bit of a rant, but poor leadership seems to come to mind as one of the big ones. And then people who don't feel like they are, and this is actually a big one for emerging professionals that I find a lot, people who feel like their growth is stifled or they're not moving anywhere. They feel like they are unable to perform the job that they really want to because they're not given opportunities, or they are sort of stuck in one type of repetitive task where they don't feel like they are able to gain more skill or gain additional skill sets that can help them grow professionally. So I don't know if either of those kind of resonate with you, but I think the last one will, because I think it's something that we've both heard a lot of people talk about.
Yeah, you know, the last one that you were talking about where growth is an issue, I'll start there. I think I personally know people who are in that situation now, and they are working with people that they don't want to work with because those are the people who are using them as, you know, as architects, as what people refer to them as, like CAD monkeys or Revit monkeys, or just the people who sit behind a computer and are expected to draft the things that someone tells them to do. The other thing that it kind of relates to, and I'm sure you've seen this happen at your office too, Mike, at some level, where if someone was at a higher position, an architect, a manager, whoever it might be, and you're working on a project, and let's say, and this applies to all designers, even graphic designers go through this a lot. Let's say you were designing something and you needed to make corrections to it, or you needed to make it an updated version of it. And then your manager or your next level up is standing behind you, pointing at your screen, telling you what to do and how to do it, right? Move this over to the left 3 pixels. No, move it back. No, move it down. No, move it back up. And it's just, they're controlling you through their words. And you feel like you have to abide by that because they're supposed to be guiding you and they're supposed to know more than you. And I think that that scenario happens far too often in a design setting. And it's one of the ones that I always try and get to stop. I speak up when it's happening to others. And when it used to happen to me, I didn't like it. I didn't like when someone stood over me hovering and breathing down my neck. And I pointed it out. And it was a simple thing to point out, but it's not simple for a lot of people because there's a fear of, well, this is how it's always been. It shouldn't change, right? And I think that this word of the word comfortable is an important one, because if you're not comfortable with what someone is doing, you have to say something. And if you don't have it in you to say it, then you need to find someone who you can say it to. And so for me, I've always tried to be that person at my office, and I'm sure other designers do the same, where people can feel comfortable coming to me and saying, hey, you know, I just want to talk to you about something that happened. What do you think about this? And at that point, I will go off the record with the firm owner and have a separate meeting and say, hey, this is what I just heard, and I don't think it's acceptable. What are you going to do about it? And in most cases, you might have a firm owner who doesn't care, right? But at my office, the owners of my office really care about these things. So they'll sit down and listen, and they'll make changes. And so going back to the other points, though, about leaders and this whole idea of middle management, that's definitely a really big thing at design firms, too, because when you think about how design firms operate, you typically have, in a traditional setting, the partners who are at the very top, and then they have the managers and the people with the managers who then manage the people who are doing the legwork, right? And most of the time, there's a clear separation between the people doing the legwork and the leadership of the firm. And when you have the middle management that is not, who are not trained as leaders, who are not, who don't have empathy, is a really big one too. Then I feel that that typically leads to a really, really, really toxic environment. And I've seen it happen on so many levels, where not only does it lead to a toxic environment, it leads to a toxic lifestyle that then leads to burnout, because then unrealistic expectations arise where designers are then expected to work beyond their typical salaried work hours to produce work for a project or a potential project that they personally shouldn't be doing so much for, right? And it's because they're so young, and this perception that a designer needs to go through this as if it was like this, I don't even know what you would call it. It's kind of like joining a fraternity.
Yeah, it's like a rite of passage is probably.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly what it is, that people feel that they need to go through a rite of passage in order to make it as a designer. And someone else will then impose that onto you. So a lot of this happens. And I think it's one of the things that at progressive firms has stopped.
Yeah.
But at the firms that are still more traditional, it's still ongoing. And it's a sense of pride for the people doing it to someone else. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And, the one thing that I've seen, and I don't know if you've seen this as much, Tim, because I know you're managing stuff, but I've maybe been doing it 1 or 2 more years more than you have. But the thing that I've seen managing more and more is that there are certain people who are put into that role of managing teams specifically and people who don't even want to be doing that, but it's the only way to, it happens because of one of a couple of reasons. One, people left the firm or the office and we need a body to take control of the project because there's nobody else to do it. Two, they were on the team already and they're the most likely, that actually happened to me. That's how I got my first project management role, was the person who was managing the project left the office. I was the most knowledgeable person on the team and I didn't have as much experience, but I was the one who could explain the project the best to the owner and to my boss. And it made the most sense for me to be the PM. Or the other one is that you naturally just impress people enough with the things that you're doing that you move up, because management in relation to sort of the drafting role in an architecture firm is kind of, you know, the next step above whatever. So you have the drafter, usually you have the project architect or the designer, and then you have, you know, a manager of the project that oversees the entire piece, right? And then you have a principal architect who might be the one where all the liability is and all the accolades at some level. But that's kind of the hierarchy. So when you only have 3 or 4 steps, like major steps that you can take in your career, or you perceptually can take in your career that most people think, I, for one, actually have been able to be fortunate enough to take sort of like horizontal moves as well. Like if you get a credential, like lead accreditation, or you get different accolades or different things that like allow you to grow up while also growing out. I feel like that's a way, but not everybody understands that. So that when you're just trying to get a better cost of living, when you're just trying to sort of increase the value that you bring, most of the time you just say, okay, well, I'm designing projects, so the only way up is to manage projects. You might not even really want to manage projects, but you just end up doing it because it's the only way for you to move up. And then people resent the fact that they're project managers and then sometimes want out of it, but they're already so embedded into the process. And like this cyclical thing just keeps happening. So then those people leave and then somebody else gets stuck being in that role. And sometimes this happens because of necessity of the project and just, you know, circumstance happens and, you know, people leave places and people get hired and that's just a natural part of the process. But sometimes you can tell when either a team is struggling or a person is struggling. And it's just, it becomes obvious to me, I think more and more, especially because I'm writing a lot about it right now, that I can see these patterns. It's almost like the Matrix, where after you realize that you're in the Matrix, you can kind of like see the patterns and you're just like able to understand what's happening. I just feel like I'm a little bit more in tune now with it's kind of these things that are happening. And again, your toxic work environment does not need to be across an entire office for it to be toxic to you. I think that's a really important part of this, is somebody could be burning out because they're not having a good experience with one person, a couple people, a process that is being put into place. And it's just important that when you're experiencing that, that you start to try to at least go to other people in the office to either commiserate or ask if this is normal. Because I think a lot of people who are starting, especially emerging professionals, don't know what to ask or who to ask. And to a degree, rightly so, that's like one of their first jobs, right? They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And then just kind of, you know, like if somebody says jump, they say how high. And it's just not a good, I don't know. It's just not a good system that we have in some firms, in some areas of the country, in some types of offices. I know what you said, like, I completely agree. There are places that are way more progressive and way more on top of this, because I think that I don't want to just say that it's because there are younger leadership members there, but I think that as you grow younger leadership into those roles and there's more seats at the table at the upper levels, there's more voices that can say, hey, baby boomer X, like, you, this is not how this generation operates, because, you know, I'm not in this generation either, but I'm one generation closer than you are. And I can see that this is how we need to treat these people better, so that, you know, it can't always be the way that the last generation did, because then we won't progress forward as a culture, as a society, as, you know, a larger group of people, right? So, but there's still a bunch of places that I can think of, like off the top of my head, that I would probably never want to work at, because I know just from people telling me those horror stories of their experiences that they dealt with certain things directly. You know, and I feel like work stress is different than toxic work environment too. Like, I need to make that distinction, because being stressed at work does not necessarily mean that you have a toxic work environment. So I don't want to, you know, make it seem like the two are intertwined. I think excessive stress, that's kind of the same thing with this difference between stress and burnout. Burnout is like stress over time compounded to make you sort of not want to work and do the things that you enjoy doing, and you just feel like overwhelmed, right? That's not the same as having a toxic work environment. I think the toxic work environment for people is almost like a symptom that causes all those other things. And if you can sort of nip them in the bud or identify them, sort of like what you said, Tim, I think that was a really good point. Like, if you know that something's happening that is causing somebody else's toxic environment to happen, like, we need to almost as individuals champion other people, or to do it ourselves and show that we can kind of stand out and help those people. Because if nobody else does it, then who is? And then that person doesn't even know that what to do in that situation, because they don't know if they should speak up or not or whatever. So I don't know. Again, I went on for a little bit there, but I think the overall point that I was trying to get to was that there are a lot of different ways that this toxic work environment, I think, can affect individuals and can affect teams, and then theoretically can affect an entire office. But it's not just one or the other. It's nuanced. It depends on what the circumstances are. Currently, I happen to work at a place that really values your flexibility and your time in the office and what you do with your pay time off and how much of it you have, and trying to, you know, during COVID right now, we have sort of reduced hours, more so just for long-term security of the office than anything. And we've stretched out schedules, but it's also kind of given everybody a chance to just sort of reflect on what we're doing, take a breath, you know, reflect on the status of our projects. Fortunately, knock on wood, I think that we're doing pretty well overall as an office, but I think it's because the office cares about the people at every different level. And I know that that's not necessarily the case in every office. So I feel very fortunate that I work in a place where I do, because, and I think you know this too, Tim, like there are places that I would want to work at because they do design well. There's places I want to work at because they take care of their people. There's places that do sort of a mix of both. And there are places that do the opposite. And I think that you just have to kind of, it's hard maybe right now because everybody's, there are a lot of people that have lost their jobs, or and that's a stress on top of everything, or they're working for a place that maybe they don't want to, but they can't find another job right now because of the circumstances. And I get that. I understand that it's very stressful right now for a lot of different reasons, but you deserve to not work in a toxic workplace, like, period. And I feel like if nothing else that, that I've said today kind of comes through, that's the message I would want to leave with everybody, is like, you don't deserve to just exist in this place where it's a toxic work environment, because ultimately, above everything else, your health and your sanity are more important.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to end on. And I agree with it, because for me, I remember when I first started working and I was one of the people who didn't say much, you know, like it's hard to believe that someone with my kind of like forthright personality, where I just say kind of, you know, like if you confront me, I'm going to talk back. But at that time, I also thought that I had to be professional and that there was this rite of passage and all this stuff. And I remember, you know, I used to work in the office all the time, to the point where one of the partners called me on like Thanksgiving morning and said, "Hey, are you in the office? Can you check something for me?" And so on and so forth. And I was just like, "No, I'm not in the office," you know? And that's when it occurred to me that, you know, because I didn't share anything of my own, because I didn't share anything of myself, because I didn't talk to anybody, because I didn't take that step to try and find camaraderie with the people around me, that I kind of created a toxic work environment for myself. Yeah. And I just wanted to mention that, because it's not always the people around you who create a toxic work environment. For me, it wasn't a toxic work environment. More that I was in this place that I didn't feel like I belonged because I didn't have friends there. Mm. And to me, that was a different type of toxic environment. That was one that I self-created because I had this notion that I had to be quiet and just learn. And in reality, the firm that I'm at is progressive, and it's not about being quiet into yourself. It's about talking to other people and getting involved and doing things with others. And when I started to see that, I was like, oh man, there's a lot of opportunity. And then it switched for me. So I think finding the right people around you that you can trust at all levels in the company is the biggest step anyone can take, because I'm now at a point at the firm where I could call up the owner when I want to talk about an issue at any time. And he's told me so. He said, you know, if anything ever happens and you're not happy with it, just remember my door is always open. And he's always there until like 7 at night. And so he's one of the people that I admire for that reason. There are also project managers and senior project managers that I can confide in. There are also people who are at the lower levels who you might think of as a draftsperson that I can confide in too. And it's, for me, it's the fact that everyone is still a person. So if I want to talk to someone about anything that I'm thinking about, talking to a younger person through a design problem that I might want to solve that I can't seem to solve on my own is probably one of the better things I could ever do, because I bring them in and I let them be a part of that solution. Yep. And when I do that at the higher levels, it's the same thing, because they want to help me get to that solution. And eventually you start to create a positive environment that you want to be in. And if you can't create it, even though you're taking these kinds of steps, then it's because the place you're in doesn't allow for that to happen and it's not a place to be in. So, you know, it's important for me to say that, because I think it's important for all designers to know that there is this weird rite of passage thing that everyone thinks about, but it doesn't actually exist. And the right way to go through any kind of career or anything that you want to do in life is to find the people that you can confide in to help you get there. And finding the right people is the top of the list for me. So
Yeah, I think that's well said, and that's a really good place to end on. So thanks, everybody, and see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. Check us out anytime at unpackingdesign.com.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.